Hey, Hitter, good morning. How y'all feel? Good morning.
Hi.
Oh. Rebecca. I didn't know you're Rebecca.
All right, I just came from school, so I had to switch my name.
I was like, Rebecca? I thought you were Rebecca Sor for a minute. I'm like, Rebecca Sor, doesn't she have a job?
Yeah, and then working.
You're not Rebecca Sor.
No.
By the way, my daughter was asking me how to change the name. And I'm like, decent with technology. And I couldn't figure it out. Where do you do it?
In the top right corner, there's like three dots.
Oh, like the bottom? Three dots. No.
And it says rename?
No, I don't see that anywhere.
Like on your own. On your own picture?
Oh, got it. Thank you. That was easy. I'm so old. Oh, all the way from Edmonton. One second. My friend is calling. I'm about to give a share. I can't talk, so I'll cut back after one. Bye. Okay, everybody, good morning. As everyone files in, which is great. It's good to see everybody on a Monday, a new month, kind of. It's still the 30th day of Sivan, but we are hours away from Rosh Chodesh Tammuz. So the good news is that we are in the heart of the summer. The bad news is, you know, the 3 weeks are almost upon us. And that's never fun. So, you know, 3 weeks plus COVID, you know, I've seen better. So who knows what'll happen. But at least the weather's good. At least Baruch Hashem, most people I know are feeling okay. Although I hear there was a slight uptick in cases in the from community in Toronto. I don't know if you're familiar with that, if you heard anything, if you know of anybody. That is the rumor has it it's on York Hill. Cohen's, that's like right next to your house. So, is that true? Can you verify? You have no idea? You're just laughing? You have no idea? Okay, fine. Just don't leave your house. wear a mask. Okay, let's begin. I'm actually recording. I remember to record. We didn't record yesterday. Okay, we got this. Okay, let's get going. Okay, good morning, everyone. I'd be remiss if I didn't deal with like probably the most obvious topic of the week that relates to two things happening at the same time, and that is a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos and also this week's Parsha. And it's super famous and popular, and if I had to guess and put money down, I'm sure all of you have heard of some of it, part of it, and is definitely worthwhile revisiting, as it is such an important topic and a very real topic. It's a very real topic because, let's face it, we deal with this challenge regularly. And the challenge that I'm referring to is the challenge of machlokas. And I'm not even going to show you what the Mishnah looks like. I'm just going to, I will read it to you. It's just open in front of me. I'm reading from, so Pirkei Avos, the numbering of the prakim are fairly universal, but the Mishnayos themselves are a little complex. Some books choose to connect different Mishnayos. You know, they'll put 17, 18 together, you know, Yud Zayin, Yud Ches, and go to Yutes. And some places will kind of, you know, split them up more or less. So that's why it can be a little complicated to find certain Mishnayos. You open it up, you're like, wait a second, this is the wrong one. And then it pops up a couple later. So that's the reason why. So this is an example. I'm reading from Perek Hey. In some versions, it's Mishnah 20, Mishnah Chaf. In some versions, it's in fact Yud Zayin. It depends on, you know, which nusach you follow. But it's the same Mishnah, it's the same words. Komach lokas shehi l'shem shemayim. So, oh, by the way, I should mention, Perek 5 is this coming Shabbos. So, this coming Shabbos is Perek 5 and Parshas Korach. That's why I feel this is very apropos. Komach lokas shehi l'shem shemayim. Every machlokas, every argument, every disagreement, every controversy, which is for the sake of heaven. So, Fali Skayim is going to endure. However, Vishinah Shem Shemayim, if it's not for the sake of heaven, in Sofali Skayim, it is not going to endure. Ezuhi machlokas shehid l'shem shemaim. What is a example of a machlokas, of an argument that is for the sake of heaven? Machlokas hillel and shammai, the argument between hillel and shammai. V'sheino l'shem shemaim. What is an example of machlokas that is not l'shem shemaim? Answer: machlokas korach v'chol adaso, korach and the entire assembly. Okay, my friends, this is a very interesting Mishnah. A lot of ink has been spilt trying to figure out this Mishnah. Anyone want to point out two very obvious questions? You know, we're a smaller group today. Anyone want to point out a obvious, I would say, you know, very peculiar statement in the Mishnah? Just hearing the words themselves. What's strange about this Mishnah? I see someone at Jacob's house is raising their hand. It's actually very interesting because the person who has Jacob's house seems to be a little shorter than Tamara. I don't know. You have a younger sister?
Yeah, she's 4. I don't think she knows the answer, though.
Oh, my goodness. My daughter's the exact same thing. If I have a 4-year-old daughter, I have a 4-year-old daughter. I'm sure
she's in JK.
JK, no way. They'll probably be in the same class one day. When is she going to come?
October.
My daughter's 25 in August. They're the same year. Isn't that cute?
Yeah, that's very cute.
The difference is that she has to come down to Viewmount in a couple of years, right? Whereas you're...
Yeah. We live near Viewmount, so it works for us.
There you go. It works for us. Okay. For us, we have no... So much. Okay, very good. All right, I'll talk to her. She's very cute. Okay. I'm really good with 4-year-olds for a few minutes. Now, the... what's an example of... I love this. See, by the way, it just shows you, children have the sense of purity in them. They hear a question, quiz want to answer. Quiz they want to involve themselves, right? Like, it's a given because they have sometimes we lose our childish, off topic, sometimes we lose our childish of why, because we're so caught up in like self-image and perception and might ask a bad question, right? But children, they're 4, all they want to do is ask, raise their hand, participate, engage. You have nothing to say. They love being called on, right? They love being called on. They love doing those things. They're totally not afraid to it, right? Well, we should have the chutzpah to not lose our childish self. Sometimes we're so caught up in being so sophisticated on university. Look at me, right? So there's some beautiful things about being a child. Okay, I stalled. That was a stall tactic. What famous question for the Mishnah? Anyone know? Well-known question on the Mishnah? I'll read it again. Every machlokas l'shem shemayim will endure. Every machlokas not l'shem shemayim will not endure. What's the example of machlokas l'shem shemayim? Shomayin Hilo, Machlokas not Hashem Shomayin Korach v'Adaso. Two obvious questions in this Mishnah. Like my JLC mug. Isn't that color disgusting and gross? Doesn't matter. They're about 50 cents a mug. So, anyone else? No? Come on. Universe knows the question. He's the only man here, so he feels bad, you know, showing up all the ladies.
Yeah.
He's mad at me. Yeah.
One question might be that it asks what a machlokas, like not l'shem shemaim, is, but it gives korach and adaso, but really they were together. It's not really machlokas if you're together.
Thank you, Yafa. Thank you, Yafa. Thank you. Good. Thank you. I appreciate that very much. That like brought back some years to my life. It rejuvenated me. The Mishnah is obvious. I don't understand. We all know that Mishnayos love balance, right? Rabbi Anasi, when he wrote down Torah Shabbat Peh, he wanted to keep things in a way that you'd be able to remember them, right? That's why he uses certain words and language and structure. So how come he says, Hillel and Shammai were, you know, adversarial. They were different opposing on the different benches. And all of a sudden, Korach v'Adaso, it should have said Korach and Moshe. Very good. I can read lips, right? Very good. And Moshe. Okay, excellent, right? So why is it saying Korach v'Adaso? They don't argue Korach v'Adaso. But the opposite. Adas Korach, they're on the same side. They question the legitimacy of Moshe and Aaron's leadership. In particular, they seem to question Aaron's leadership. Although it is very complicated, we'll do that tomorrow. But what's going on here? Obvious question. Question number one, that was question number two. Question number one is, Machlokas L'Shem Shemayim is going to endure. Machlokas not L'Shem Shemayim is not going to endure. Yeah, is that true? Is that really true? Like, is that always true? What do you mean it's going to endure? So it requires, I believe, a lot of clarification. And in fact, don't we want machlokas not to endure? Oh, yeah. My machlokes is still Hashem Shemayim, you know, Goldberg. Greenberg and Goldberg have been going at it publicly for a very long time. It's the Shem Shemayim, so it's like enduring. That's a, wouldn't we rather reach the sense of peace? Wouldn't we rather get to, okay, there's machlokes, get over it, figure it out. And by the way, is there really machlokes today of Shammai and Hillel? The halacha follows, generally speaking, Hillel. There's no machlokes, right? In fact, the Mishnah in Adios is very clear. In various places, we follow Hillel. Again, with few exceptions. Why those exceptions? Not for now. But generally speaking, if you had to bet money, you bet on Hillel, right? So what do you mean that this machlokes is going to endure? Is that like a goal? Is that an aspiration? Wouldn't we want things not to endure? Right? Wouldn't we prefer not to have machlokes at all? Or if they do, wouldn't we want them to kind of, you know, disappear, fade away? So this Mishnah is a very, very odd Mishnah. So I want to, I once heard a very interesting analogy. Imagine if you were a news reporter during the time of this revolt. So first of all, you'd be ecstatic because you have what to write about. Although, mind you, there's a lot of controversy last week too in Shlach, right? You don't realize this, but you're about to go on like 38 years of unemployment. Because there's very little to write about. Well, actually, the truth is, last week, Parsha, you found out, you found out for the next 38 years, nothing's going on. So you think you're unemployed. It's like COVID, right? The world's coming to an end. There's going to be no business, no jobs. Nothing is going to happen for 30 years, right? And it's Baruch Hu's arguing out the Moshe. All of a sudden, when you hear this decree, you think all of a sudden, there's what to talk about. You are ecstatic. You got a story. You got juice, right? So you get to write about it. No, and in this corner, there's Moshe and Korach. And by the way, how does Dasam Vavira fit into all this? Good question. Maybe that's tomorrow's topic, right? Forget Dasam Vavira for now. Korach and Adasso and problems and this, and it's cool. You got fire coming down from heaven. Like this is like what reporters dream of, right? This is like, you know. But if you were covering like Shammai and Hillel, you know, maybe like in the back corner of some newspaper somewhere, you know, one old sagely rabbi with a long beard. You know, my son taught me a new expression. There are two types of beards. Could be you're familiar with this. I'm not familiar with this until the other day. There's a beard on your face and a beard off your face. I have a beard on my face. That's a modern beard. A beard off the face. That's like a sage. Okay. So you have these two rabbis with beards off their face. And because I'm sure they did. And, you know, they're having some type of dispute. How much a newspaper print would it get? Yeah, like a little corner at the bottom. You know, they argued over the same argument between them about, you know, do you do smicha on Shabbos of Erev Pesach? Do you do smicha on your korban Pesach? Smicha means you lean on the korban or not. Animals are muksa, right? Do you do smicha or not? It's a whole machlokes. It's a very well machlokes in the Gemara. It's a whole controversy that happened. Like, okay, that's like a footnote in life. Like, what's the big deal? You know, or even something that I'm sure maybe you're familiar with. Machlokes in Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel. You know, chanukah candles. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8, 7, 7, 4, 3, 2, 1, right? Okay. Like, that's not making the paper. It's barely newsworthy to print anything. Okay, so some guy who's like, you know, breaking in or some guy who's retired, you're like, okay, go cover that type of controversy. All right, write your story, I should say. But write a couple lines. Meanwhile, this Moshe and this Korach story, it is juicy. You got a lot of news. You know, the Medrash goes on to give us, you know, Korach walks in, goes over to Moshe and says, last week's Parsha, tzitzis. You think that it should get, you know, a in your tzitzis, that they're all white, add a little bit of blue. By the way, machlokes is shown in 1 string of blue or 2 strings of blue, right? What about if my entire garment is blue? You mean to tell me I need 1 string? Come on, I have a whole garment of blue. The famous Medrash goes on to say, I have a whole room filled this for him. And you mean to tell me I have to put one little parchment of Shema on the mezuzah? I have room filled this for him. Wouldn't it be exempt from a mezuzah? So these are questions that Korach was antagonizing Moshe with, right? And essentially trying to argue that, you know, this whole thing is all nepotism. That Aaron was given this position. It was nepotism for Moshe Rabbeinu that he was in fact not worthy. By the way, you think Korach is into this? So is Korach's wife. Korach's wife was also antagonistic. The Medrash goes on to say that, you know, if you recall early on in Bamidbar, where every Levi had to be stripped of all their clothing and all their hair had to be shaved. Now, this unfortunately reminds us of very difficult times with the Jewish people, but that's what happened. So Mrs. Korach goes to Korach and say, you know what Moshe did to you? He made you strip and have all your hair be shaved off. Can you believe he did that? So Korach's like, it's true, but like that applied to his family too. His kids also had to do that. His nephews, right? Aaron's family, they all had to do that too. So like, what's the big deal? Like, it was, no, but he did it only to embarrass you. I mean, she was added fuel to the fire. So the Medrash goes on to say it wasn't just Korach, it was Korach's wife. It was, and everyone was involved in trying to antagonize Moshe Rabbeinu. And so this was the, and it was an intellectual argument, right? This is considered a machlokas. The truth is, imagine if you're writing now an article, fast forward many years later, and you're writing an article. By the way, do you know what the machlokas was between Korach and Adasel, between Korach and Moshe? The Gemara is not so clear. First of all, it's not written anywhere in the Torah. It's very ambiguous exactly what his beef is, right? It's not even so clear. The Gemara goes on to say it's argued about A, argued about B, argued about C. We see from here, and we see this often with human beings. After you have an argument, you're like, someone goes over to you and says, yeah, here you don't talk to, you know, George or Rachel. What are you so upset about? You're like, half the time people can't remember. Or when you try to express it to somebody and you want them to be on your side and you express, you're like, oh yeah, can you believe I did that? And they look at you like, what's the big deal? Like, get over it, right? Forget your ego. Check your ego at the door. But many times we don't even remember what the root of the machlokes is truly all about. And so this idea of a machlokes which is not going to endure is truly one that is not l'shem shemayim, but rather it's about power and it's about ego. And in fact, the commentators say, why is it Korach v'Adaso? It's trying to show you that even among Korach and the 250 people, they still were fighting with each other. Meaning, this is what we're upset about. That's what we're upset about. This is what we should do. That's what we should do. Even among each other, there was a sense of dissent. There wasn't one unified opinion. And what's amazing about Shammah and Hillel, the Machlokes Shammah and Hillel, it's true. Of course, we, for technical reasons, have to paskin, have to hold like either one pin or the other. You know, Hillel, you got to do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 8. Why? Because by choosing Hillel as the defining character, as the defining halachic authority, in many ways, it unites the people. Because the Gemara says there was a time that the Torah was going to be split into two different Torahs, two Torot. You know why we hold like Hillel? It's not because Hillel's smarter. It's not because Hillel's greater. In fact, they say Shammah is smarter and Shammah is greater. What's the reason why we hold like Hillel? The reason the Gemara gives is because they were Baishanim, they were Lomadim, and they always, in Machlokas, always mention and reference Shammai's opinion first. And because Hillel gave deference to Shammai and respected him and wasn't antagonistic, how many people do you know today when there's a machlokas, right? I'm not talking to him. I'm not going to quote that person. That person is evil, terrible, horrible. There's something very special and very unique about Hillel. And that's the reason why we hold like Hillel. And in fact, the reason why the rabbis wanted to establish that we hold like Hillel was that there wouldn't be a sense of controversy, so that the Jewish people would be united. But the machlokes is enduring. You have to understand. The machlokes is enduring because their names are enduring. It's not because we still fight. No. The concept of machlokes, you know, we don't fear, God forbid, should we fear machlokes. In fact, the opposite is true. Arguing for the sake of Torah is valuable. You know, the great argument between the Hasidim and Mitnagdim that took place 100 years ago, it was a terrible, disgusting battle. It was brutal. It was horrible, right? It was fundamentally different ways how to view your Jewish experience, right? Fundamentally different. The battles were terrible. You know, historians say that, you know, different groups put other people groups in Cherem and got the local governments involved. It was a very difficult time on Jewish people. By the way, who won? Both. Because what's the answer? We met somewhere in the middle. And they also realized that there were bigger issues the Jewish community had to deal with actually like emancipation and a major secularization of the Jewish world. So in many ways, you know, this machlokes of tension between two groups has value. It's important to say, why do I do what I do? Who am I? And what are the challenges? And what can I see? And machlokes is important. And to say, no, we all want peace. Just don't give your opinion and just be quiet. That actually is not a Jewish value. When it comes to action, how we're going to behave, that we need to be unified. We need to be unified, okay, like Behillel. In fact, so much so there's a Mishnah in Brachos where one person's posture during Shema is like Beis Shammai, like Beis Hillel, and they say to him, that happened to you because you publicly violated the words of Hillel, and the halacha is like him, and that's considered totally, totally inappropriate. And so I think we have to look at machlokas as something that does have value. We don't want machlokas to go away necessarily. When it comes to the actions, however, that we need to be unified, and that's why the halacha had to make a determination that we hold like Hillel. And again, why do we hold like Hillel? Not because he's smarter, because he's a bigger man. And the Gemara goes on to say that the grandchildren of Hillel and Shammai actually married each other. Because there's no, even though it's true they disagreed, doesn't mean it was a fundamental argument from anger and hatred and animosity. Rather, the opposite was true. Our families can still coexist, right? You know, I don't know what, you know, Pesach looked like. Pesach Seder's looked like, right? That must have been interesting, right? But, you know, they can still coexist. And that is why they would, in fact, live. Their families actually were totally, totally intertwined. The Medrash, in fact, the Mishnah, there's a Mishnah Idiot, which I have in front of me on my screen. Let me read it to you. Oh, this is an amazing story. Okay, you know what? Let's do a quick share screen. Quick share screen. Boom, 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 boom. Share screen. Done. Okay. Says the Mishnah Idiot. Hello, Amir. Again, I'm not so interested in the technical machloket for now. We're talking about Maim Shuvim, which is drawn water. Talking about the machloket. Then a machloket. Hillel said X. Shammai said Y. Chachamim said no. The halacha is like neither of them. But look at the answer. Ella. Ad shebo shnei gardi mishar ashbat v'ushalayim. Two people who were weavers. They were basket weavers from the dung gate. That's where they would literally throw the dung, meaning they came from the poorest community in Yerushalayim. I want to point this out. Two individuals who were basket weavers, who were impoverished, they came and involved themselves in a machloket with Shammai and Hillel. That's like the Supreme Court having a major debate on a major, major issue. And someone, the Havdil, you know, from Gene and Finch, from a low-class, impoverished neighborhood, who perhaps lacks education, lacks physication, wherever they come from, right? They're in a poor neighborhood, right? A neighborhood that simply didn't have the same education or opportunities. They show up, and they testify. Look at these words. If it wouldn't be in a Mishnah, it'd be almost unbelievable. What do? They testify that these are Shemaya and Avtalion who were the rabbis of Hillel and Shammai. And they argued and they said, we know, let me tell you, this is what happened. And when the rabbis heard these two poor individuals claim that they testified that the greatest sages of all time, Shemaya, that's how they behaved, Chacham said, okay, that's the halacha. And you look at this and you're like, this is unbelievable. Shammai and Hillel, and Chazal, were willing to hear evidence from the poorest of the poor, the people on the lowest strata of the social economic world. And these people could testify what they saw from the great sages, and because of that, established the halacha. That, to my friends, says something of tremendous value, that yes, everybody has equal opportunity. Everybody has an opportunity to be involved in Torah learning, and establish precedents. If I was Hillel and Shammai, I'd be like, I'm going to listen to what they have to testify. Imagine if they testified against you, right? I would scream and yell that these two poor people, they know what they're talking about. We're accepting testimony from these two lowlifes, uneducated, poor individuals, and their testimony is going to override what I'm saying. I'm the great Hillel. We're on the great Shammai. And we're going to listen to these two people over them. my friends, this says a tremendous about machlokas. That yes, Hillel Shai machlokas. But when these two people came, they tipped their hats. Okay, Shmain of Talion. Yes, we don't care who you are. This is how you're testifying. We're going to accept your testimony. This is an amazing thing, right? And the Gemara and the Mishnah to Mishnah in Idiot says, Lama maskun divrei Sham v'Hillel levatala. Why do you record the opinions of Shammai and Hillel for? You don't need them, right? Right? Because the halacha either did follow them or didn't follow them, right? But why would you mention it? To teach you that do not always persist in your opinion. Because the fathers of the world, Shammai and Hillel, did not persist in their opinion. Because sometimes halacha did not follow Hillel, did not follow Shammai, but followed another halacha. But why do they mention it? To show you that these were great sages. But they were willing to bow out when they realized that they were wrong or for the greater good of the Jewish people. That, my friends, is what real machloket is all about. Machloket l'shem shemayim. If you're really interested in trying to accomplish what is Ratzon Hashem, you also are willing to bow out for the greater good. You're also willing to bow out for the greater good of Hashem, for the greater good of Am Yisrael. And if your goal is to magnify HaKadosh Baruch Hu and his imprint on the world, and the purpose is to add light and goodness and holiness, then of course, what do? You immediately bow out and you don't hold on to machlokes for the sake of machlokes, right? And this is a tremendous lesson. Tremendous lesson. We spoke about, you know, ego last week. We spoke about humility a couple weeks ago, right? To me, this is really putting everything into play right here when it comes to this machlokes. And some people also say, you know what, you don't want to mention Korach and Moshe? You don't want to give Korach the benefit of almost being placed in the same sense as Moshe in a Mishnah. And I think also this notion of something that's preserved for, that's going to be enduring, real machlokas l'shem shemayim, is something which is important, is valuable, but even more important is to know when to take a step back, to bow your head, to realize, and it's not a matter of I won or I lost. Sometimes you have to realize, for the greater sake of Am Yisrael, for shem shemayim, right? And the Gemara says it's Eish and Mayim, it's fire and water, right? It's the Shem Shemayim, heaven. When those two things kind of combat each other, what is going to prevail? And so, interesting Mishnah that relates to our Parsha. Yon, of course, Korach and Adato. It was wrapped up in beautiful language of the Shem Shemayim. But when you dig a little bit deeper at the words of Korach, maybe we'll see that tomorrow. He clearly was not interested in Shem Shemayim. He was interested in his own power, his own ego, in order to truly advance his own career and his own agenda. And that's why Sofogli Batel, we know what happened to him. By the way, you know what happened to his children? Miz Morshir Livnei Korach. They did not follow in the way of their father. And they, in fact, were able to do tshuva. They did not continue as their father. And they actually, as the Chazal tell us, actually came about. And they, shall we say, were on the good team by the end of it. It just goes to show you, you have an ability to go against even what you see around your house. Your mother and your father are evil people. Doesn't mean necessarily going to follow in their ways. And they're given tremendous credit for their outstanding behavior and the ability to truly see truth, not be trapped in the toxic environment that they were brought up in. Okay, have a wonderful day, everybody. Great to see you all on this beautiful new week, Monday. Look forward to seeing you all again tomorrow.
Thank you. Okay.
Go, everyone. Have a good day.
Thank you.